Thank you, and thanks for the organizer for having me here and for be part of this wonderful program. So I'm going to be talking about 3D stuff, and this is all work done together with my students, Tao, who did all the hard work. And you're going to see it's really complicated computation. But the idea is to trying to understand what kind of 3D topological faces are there. So by 3D topological faces, explicitly, what I mean is we want to think about things with a gap, with a finite energy gap from the ground state to the excited states. And we want to consider restrict ourselves, at least in this talk, to faces with finite ground state degeneracy. So we're not talking about fractons or anything Liang was talking about yesterday. So we're thinking in more mundane sense about what 3D topological faces we're interested in. And we want to consider faces with fractional excitations in the bulk. So not topological insulator or superconductor, but something like gauge theory, dynamical gauge theory. So the thing is, we know a lot of things happening in 2D, but we don't know so many things in 3D. In 2D, we have a very good idea of what can happen basically in two-dimensional fractional topological faces with a finite gap and also a finite ground state degeneracy. We already know a lot of faces in that category, including the fractional quantum Hall. There's a large category of that. There's abelian and non-abelian fractional quantum Halls. And the simple example of Torrey code, proposing by Alexei in 2003 and its generalization into all these quantum double models and also the whole class of string nets. And they represent a large class of Anyang models of 2D topological faces. And basically we know that what can happen in 2D is that we can have point excitations carrying fractional statistics and they're called Anyangs. And they can have fusion rules, it can be abelian, non-abelian, and there can be exchange and braiding statistics. And basically, if you want a mass term to characterize all this, it's a modular braided fusion category. Correct me if I say something wrong, the mathematicians in the audience. But for 3D, we know much less. We know there's Torrey code. We can take Alexei's construction and put it onto a 3D lattice and still have a well-defined topological theory. And it turns out that the 3D Torrey code is a version of three-dimensional Z2 gauge theory. And what happens is that the fractional excitations in the bulk are the point charge excitations of the Z2 gauge group. And also we can have gauge flux. Now gauge flux in 3D are loops, and they go around circles. And they're sort of bosonic in the sense that they don't have statistics of their own. And the interesting thing happens in a 3D Z2 gauge theory is when we bring a bosonic gauge charge around this gauge flux, and there's a pi phase. And that's very simple. So this basically characterize what happens in 3D discrete gauge theories, that we can have charge excitations, we can have flux excitations, and the braiding statistics is this Aharonov Baum effect. Basically, if we have a more general group, and then the charge excitations are the representations of the group, and the flux excitations are labeled by the group element, and when you bring a representation around the group element acts on the representation. Okay, but the more exciting thing is something discovered more recently, that in 3D gauge theories with discrete gauge groups, and they can be twisted in the sense that the gauge flux can have statistics of their own. So one example studied in a series of papers is that if we have a gauge group of Z2 cross Z2, one Z2 doesn't work, but if we have two Z2s, then of course we still have two species of gauge charge, one corresponding to each generator of the group, and they're still bosonic. But on the other hand, the gauge flux, they do something non-trivial in that if we can have this kind of braiding process, which Meng talked about extensively in his previous talk, so I'll just go through this thing very quickly. If we have a base loop of one of the Z2, a gauge flux of one of the Z2, and if we link two of the gauge flux of the other Z2 on top of this red base loop, and then we braid them, there can be a braiding phase factor of -1. And this is independent of the Aharonov-Bohm effect, where the gauge charge go around the flux loop, giving you a phase factor of -1. So in some sense, we might say that the gauge flux is also anionic, whatever it means, in this case. So of course, this is the theory was already written up by Dargraf and Witten in the 1980s, where they called it a discrete transcendent term. And the whole class of Dargraf-Witten gauge theory is for these kind of gauge theories where we have bosonic gauge charge and anionic gauge flux, which have these three loop braiding processes. So this is more or less what we know. We know, well, barring what Meng was talking about in his talk about fermionic case, but we know in gauge theory with bosonic charge, there can be an untwisted and a twisted version. But this is a very limited variety compared to 2D. So we want to know what do we don't know about three-dimensional topological faces. But this is not really a question that's well posed to answer. So we can ask a more concrete question, like what twisted gauge theory do we have with fermionic gauge charge? All the Dargraf-Witten ones are with bosonic gauge charge. So of course, what we need to do is to generalize Dargraf-Witten to include fermions. And of course, we heard talks yesterday by Anton and also by Dan giving very general framework about how to include fermions in interacting topological faces. And also, Meng gave an example of when this kind of things can happen. But we are mortals, so we want to start from a different perspective, and we want to take a very explicit lattice model construction, the worker one construction, and see if we can get anything from there. So in this talk, I'm not directly answering this question, so I'm answering a minor question, which is if we can start from this worker one construction and get twisted gauge theory, which we already know that happened in Dargraf-Witten theory, which is with bosonic gauge charge. But because the worker one construction can naturally include fermions as a gauge charge in their framework. So in principle, this gives us a way to attack the question I was posing here. Okay. So let me give you a very brief introduction to what Kevin Worker and Junghan Wang proposed in 2011. And if you this is an exactly solvable lattice model, and it comes from the Kring-Yoder topological quantum field theory. But if you go look at the mathematical framework or go look at the lattice. A lattice construction of Hamiltonians and wave functions, it looks terribly complicated. But the way I understand it is through pictures. And I do believe that they're intuitive enough for me to talk about it and convey its essence without going into too many technical details. So I hope that by just drawing pictures, I can convince you what is happening in worker one model and give you a good sense of what we're trying to do. Okay, so these worker one models, they're constructed in such a way that the ground state wave function is a three-dimensional wave function. It represents the space-time trajectories of two-dimensional anions. So suppose you're given a bunch of two-dimensional anions, like in a fractional quantum hall. You can have one-third charge, two-third, and one. And the three-dimensional wave function of the worker one model is try to mimic how the anions might propagate and be created, breed with each other, and finally annihilate with one another in the space-time, in the three-dimensional space-time. Okay, so we can have a configuration of vacuum where nothing happens. So this is just totally everything zero. And we can have a configuration where with a small loop, meaning that we create a pair of anions, and then they move around and finally annihilate. And this is a loop of a different species of anion. And this is a configuration where we create two pairs of anions, and one red and one green, and we braid them around each other, and finally they pair annihilate. Okay, so the wave function is a superposition of every possible kind of space-time trajectories for the anions, and that's it. So, so the input to the two-dimensional worker well model is to have a set of two-dimensional anion. Let me label it by A. And there are fusion and braiding rules. So the fusion and braiding rules gives us the weight in front of each configuration. So here I'm just drawing them as a superposition, but actually I forgot to put in some numbers in front of each configuration, because when we're making the superpositions, we want to make sure that they're superposed with the right amplitude or phase factor. And the amplitude or phase factor comes from these braiding processes. For example, if these two particles have a minus one braiding statistics, then there should be a minus one sign in front of this configuration. And that's it. So given a set of anions and their fusion and braiding rules, we can derive the coefficient in front of every space-time trajectory, and then make a big superposition of everything, and we get our model. So the output is a 3D gapped exactly solvable lattice model, and the interesting thing is that the input of the two-dimensional anions, they appear on the surface of this three-dimensional model that we write up. So you can easily see why that happens, because if the space-time trajectory doesn't close, and if the system has a surface and the trajectory end at the top and the bottom surface, then the end of these space-time lines, they become excitations on the surface. And to convince you that actually the surface excitation has exactly the statistics of fusion or braiding rules that we would expect of these two-dimensional anions, you can imagine that we make two excitations on the surface and exchange them. But this exchange process, I can imagine it happening on the surface, or I can push it a little bit down into the bulk. And in the bulk knows about the exchange or braiding statistics of the anions, and so if we want to untwist this exchange process, if we want to undo this exchange process, it will introduce some phase factor, for example, a minus one here, if this particle is a fermion. And similarly, if we have two particles, two excitations braiding on the surface, and we can push this braiding process a little bit into the bulk, where the bulk knows that these two particles, if they braid, they come with a minus sign. So if we want to undo this braiding, we get a minus sign phase factor here. So this is just saying that whatever you input into your worker well machine, and then it comes up as surface excitations with exactly the kind of braiding and fusion statistics that you want. So this is all very nice. But the question we want to address is what's happening in the bulk? So suppose that we don't care what happens on the surface. And then what kind of topological order, what kind of gap phases are we having if we just forget about boundary condition first? If we have a periodic boundary condition, then what kind of order can we have in the bulk? So of course, if you read the paper by Walker and Wang, they already gave the answer. That is, if A is modular, meaning that if every particle braids with something, That is also to say that if I have an excitation here, I would be able to detect it from far away. So if that's the case for every particle, then the 3D bulk has trivial topological order. So this I can also try to explain from pictures. That is, of course, all these strings, all these space-time trajectories, they can end on surface, and they create surface excitation. But if I ever try to end it in the bulk, if I ever try to cut it off just in the bulk, let's say we cut the red line off here and make an excitation at this point. And then I can imagine that there can be virtual processes where the green anion can braid around it. But if it's a braiding process in this three-dimensional space-time, I can smoothly move this braiding process away. I can move this green circle away from the endpoint of this red line. So it's not really well defined in this three-dimensional space-time whether the green anions braid or not with the red anion, right? Because, yes?
Do you mean trivial or invertible?
Sorry?
Do you mean to say if it's modular that it's trivial or it's invertible?
If there's no symmetry, I would say it's trivial. Yes, if there's symmetry, there can be symmetry-protected order. Otherwise, I don't know of 3D invertible topological order without symmetry protection. Oh, okay, I see. At least on very simple manifolds. Okay. Yeah, no degeneracy. So, I'm just trying to argue that if everything braids with something else, or it can braid with itself, or it can braid with some other anion, but if everything at least braids with something, then this space-time trajectory cannot end in the bulk and make an excitation. So if everything braids with everything, with something, then the 3D bulk doesn't have fractional point excitations. But this is, of course, assuming that every fractional excitation, point excitation, is made by endpoints of this space-time trajectory. And that I can't argue in a very, I cannot prove by words now. But on the other hand, if A is non-modular, that means at least a subset of these input anion does not braid with anything. So you cannot detect it from very far away by braiding process. Then this line of space-time trajectory can indeed end here. There's no contradiction to it ending here. My argument is just saying there are no interesting point excitations.
No, you need to say more than that. Because you said
yeah.
You also know topological.
Yeah.
You also know interesting lines.
In principle, I need to say more than that. In principle, if I want to prove things, I need to say, like there's no ground state degeneracy or there's no topological entropy. This is very incomplete argument for why there's no topological order, but of course I don't know of the type of topological order where you don't have point particle excitations but only loop excitations. So this is, yeah.
Okay, maybe we come to make some problem. The way I understand that is that you don't have particles before line, which would give you something interesting in the
whole thing. Yeah, that's definitely possible that.
Then that goes. That's one of the seven first.
Yeah, definitely. So, in principle, it's definitely possible that we have 3+1 dimensional topological phase and all the fractional excitations are loops. I've never seen examples like that. it would be definitely be.
No, it could be a mixture. It could be loops by themselves. trivial, but the roots and the surfaces are something interesting. And that, I think, should be relatively easy to construct.
Let me phrase the question, right? So when I think about the 3D particle, the point excitations only can have just boson statistics, but there are loop excitations and there are mutual statistics between the point and loops. The question is that being excluded here?
So it's a theorem, and she just sketched sort of the intuition behind it, but it is a theorem of Cohen and Zhang-Han's that if you start with the modular tensor category, and then you take this theory on closed three-dimensional Fourier space, which is one-dimensional, basically the theory is more than one.
Okay, so you say that the intuitive argument is not.
The intuitive argument is just, it's not at all.
Yeah, whatever I'm saying is trying to argue for the concrete result. The mathematical result is in no way a proof of that. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think it's better maybe to be seen as an argument why there can be fractional excitations in a bulk when the set of anions you input is indeed non-modular, meaning that something cannot be detected from braiding. Then in that case, the endpoints of these space-time lines, they can exist in a bulk. And there's no contradiction to their existence. And also, when you try to create them, you create them in pairs. And that's an indication of fractionalization in the three-dimensional bulk. OK, so let me give some examples. This is very nicely discussed by Kurt and Fiona in the papers, where they gave the example of the input being trivial particle and a boson. So this is like the trivial particle and Z2 gauge charge. And if you use that as an input, then you can see that nothing breaks with anything, right? This is a boson. It has trivial self statistics. So the central part is just the two anions themselves. And if that's the case, then these two particles, they both appear as, well, of course, one is trivial. The E particle appears as a fractional excitation in the three-dimensional bulk. And this corresponds to a Z2 gauge theory in the three-dimensional bulk. And the bulk quasi-particle has a Z2 structure. And also the surface quasi-particle has a Z2 structure. On the other hand, if we do a slight change, if we make the second quasi-particle a semion, the fusion rule still works, that we have two semions and it fuses into identity, but now semion breathes with itself. So this is no longer, so this S is no longer in the center. Sorry?
What are the fusion rules in
the center? Oh, the fusion rule is just E fused with E is trivial. It's a Z2 fusion rule. I forgot to say it's Z2, but yeah. It can be, if it's Z3, then it's a Z3 gauge theory. If it's Z4, it's a Z4 gauge theory, correspondingly. So if we input an identity and semion, then semion breaks with itself. So it's no longer a bulk quasi-particle. There are no fractional quasi-particles in the bulk, and the bulk is trivial in the sense that Gauss-Lady degeneracy is one. And but still, the surface topological order contains both identity and semion. So of course, the worker one construction has been very useful. And in the original paper by Kevin and Zheng Han, they discuss an exactly solvable model of fractional quantum Hall, of course, realized on the surface. So this is the first time that fractional quantum Hall has been written as exactly solvable model. It's believed that we cannot do this in two dimension, but if we realize it on the surface of a three-dimensional system, it can be done. Fiona, Lucas, me, and Ashwin, we did a bunch of papers in during the years of 2013 to 14 using worker one models to study surface topological order of symmetry protected topological faces, because we know that for these invertible symmetry protected topological face, there can be anions appearing on the surface. And what's interesting about that is that the symmetry realization on these anions is so strange that they cannot happen in a two-dimensional, in a pure two-dimensional setting. We have to somehow have it on the surface. And by using Walker Wang model, we can naturally have whatever anion we want on the surface. We just input it into the Walker Wang model and they appear. But of course, the trick is to have them transform in under symmetry in the right way. So we did this for a bunch of models, bosonic and fermionic topological insulators and superconductors. Yeah, this is the picture. Okay, so we have bulk, symmetry protected topological order, and the surface anion. And so, but of course, we can have a fractional bulk. And the quasi-particle content is very easy to determine according to the rule I just explained. But the tricky thing is, what kind of, what are the flux loops doing? We know what the quasi-particle content is. And we want to know what the flux loops are doing in the 3D bulk. For example, do they have non-trivial grading statistics like in the twisted Dyckhoff-Witten gauge theory? And the answer is yes. So this is what we did. I hope I still have time to show it. And before I go into all the details, let me try to summarize what we did. We found a set of 2D anions as an input such that we can recover the twisted Z2 cross Z2 gauge theory with this three-loop braiding process. And of course, I need to explain to you what the input is, and also I need to explain to you how we can demonstrate the twisted topological order. Of course, the way to demonstrate the loop braiding statistics, the best way is to write down the membrane operator that generate the loops and show that the braiding, of course, give you a minus sign. But it turns out to be pretty complicated to do that. And instead, what we did is to write down the model, do a three-dimensional modular transformation, and figure out the SNT modular transformation on the ground space. And from there, we can compare it with the SNT transformation for the Dyckhoff-Witten version of the theory and see that they indeed correspond to the same topological order. So just in case I don't have time to explain all the details, here's a summary of what we found. The Dyckhoff-Witten contains bosonic untwisted gauge theory as well as twisted gauge theory. Here by bosonic, I mean the gauge charge is bosonic. And Walker Wang seems to be a bigger set. First of all, there can be trivial topological order in the bulk, invertible topological order in the bulk. There can be no quasi-particles. And we knew that there can be bosonic untwisted gauge theory like the one Fiona showed in their paper with Z2 topological order. And our work showed that there can be bosonic twisted gauge theory as well. But of course, it's easy to put in fermions as gauge charge in the Walker Wang construction. You just make one of the anions in your input as fermion. And the interesting thing is to move on to see if we can make a fermionic twisted gauge theory using this construction. So I want to make a comment that Dyckhoff-Witten can be thought of on the wave function level, sort of as a membrane condensation. So it's we can think of it as a condensation of gauge defects or a domain worth of symmetry. And then if we have a condensation of these domain worlds, we have a gauge theory. But of course, if you want to have twisted gauge theory, then we need to have some phase factor in this condensation. On the other hand, Walker Wang model is very much a loop condensation. That's the picture I show you, that they are composed of space-time trajectories of point particles. So it seems that there's some sort of duality between membrane condensation and loop condensation. But of course, I need to be very careful with the word duality here because it's used in a very much different sense in this conference. But I think Anton might use the duality when you talk about the two-group thing, and there's maybe a well-known duality between the Dyckhoff-Witten side and the Walker Wang side. And I also put this circle in. Of course, I don't want to exactly say that whether these circles should exactly overlap with each other. from Mong's talk, we see that these two groups can at least generate something here, and also two groups can cover most of the other faces. Okay, so maybe use 5 or 6 minutes to briefly go through what we did. And this is all by Zitao, and we use this idea of modular transformation, which is a large gauge transformation on the manifold of the space manifold, not the space-time, just the space manifold the system lives on. And correspondingly, we're inducing a transformation on the degenerate ground space of the system. So, this has been done a lot in two dimension, where if you start from a two torus, and the two modular transformations, the two generators of the modular transformations you can do, one is this shear transformation, you can push it in this side. And if you think of a torus, it's like cutting the torus open, twisted it by 2 pi, and then regluing it. And also there can be, there's this operation of 90-degree rotation. So if you combine these two, we get the whole set of modular transformation for two torus. And this forms a projective representation of SL2Z, and it distinguishes different two-dimensional topological order, at least for all the cases that we know. In 3D, we can do very similar thing, and we're going to restrict to the simple case of three torus. We're not going to think about very complicated manifolds. Just three torus, the modular transformation is generated by two things. One is a 120-degree rotation along the diagonal axis of the three torus, and the other one is a shear transformation in one of the directions. And this modular transformation on Dyagrove-Witten theory has been calculated for simple twisted gauge theories in these papers, and we're just going to do a corresponding calculation on the Walker Wang side and compare the data. So if we want to do this, we want to find the minimum lattice model of Walker Wang, and we want to find the simplest representation of the wave function, and it turns out the simplest one is like that. So this is a this is z direction, this is x direction, this is y direction. And the minimum one, this is the minimum trivalent lattice on a 3D torus. And it includes six spins on the links. And we follow the 2D string nets procedure. Try to use the moves of the strings to recover whatever is done in the modular transformation. So this is all what Zitao did. We did S transformation where we rotate everything by 120 degrees and map the wave function back, and every step corresponds to a unitary transformation. And similarly, we can do this twist, which is, so if we think about the 3D torus as a solid torus with the inner surface and outer surface identified, then the twist can be imagined as cutting the solid torus, cutting them open and twist it by 2 pi and then regluing it. So pictorically, this corresponds to taking the z direction string and letting it go around a big circle like that. And then we map the wave function back. This is a much longer calculation. Okay, so the conclusion is that the SNT matrix exactly match what we would expect from the Z2 quasi-Z2 Dyagrove-Witten twisted gauge theory. Of course, there are a lot of details in here when we try to match the bases and get rid of all the gauge choices. It confirms the topological order. And this is a generic process. It doesn't depend on what input we feed into the program. The diagrams I drew is complicated, but the nice thing is that Zitao only has to draw it once. If we want to do other model, he doesn't have to draw it for different inputs. So now I need to explain what the input is in order to generate a twisted Dyagrove-Witten, a Z2 quasi-Z2 Dyagrove-Witten theory. So the general rule is that if we want some quasi-particle in the bulk, we need to have it as a subset of the anions on the surface, such that they don't breed with anything. Okay. So if the white ones, they don't breed with anything, they can penetrate into the bulk, but the ones they, which do have breeding statistics will stay on the surface. And so if we start with a set of Z2 charge, then we have them in the bulk, which correspond to a Z2 gauge theory. If we start from more complicated charges, like if E1, E2, and their combination, if they're all of order 2, then in the bulk, it becomes a Z2 cross Z2 gauge theory. But this is too trivial. If we just start from the charges and let them penetrate into the bulk, it's probably going to be untwisted, because so this pretty much I believe it. And if we want to have some twisting, then we need to come up with some more non-trivial input. So what we did is to take the representation of D8. So D8 is the symmetric group of a square. And this is a non-abelian group. It has higher dimensional non-abelian irreducible representations. It has actually 5 representations. 4 of them are one-dimensional, and 1 of them is two-dimensional. And the fusion rule is such that if we fuse 2 of the two-dimensional ones, it gives us all the one-dimensional ones. So for every group, if we take the irreducible representation, you can just think of it as the charge of the symmetry group. And they can all be bosonic. Just imagine a bosonic system with this discrete symmetry, then all the gauge charges, all the symmetry charges can be bosonic. And they can have mutual bosonic statistics. So in that case, if we use that as an input to the theory, then we're going to have everything as quasi-particle in the bulk. And that will give us a 3D bulk order of the 8 gauge theory. But this is not what we want. This is too big. So what we did instead is to make the two-dimensional representation a semion. And by doing that, we exclude it from the bulk excitation. So omega doesn't appear as a bulk excitation anymore, and the only bulk excitation are the identity E1, E2, E3. And these 4, they form a Z2 cross Z2 group of charges. So this is a good thing to do, because if omega is semion, this is still consistent with the fusion rule, that we fuse 2 semions, we get a bunch of bosons. So now omega has a braiding with itself, so it's not a 3D quasi-particle anymore, and we get a three-dimensional Z2 cross Z2 gauge theory. And also, using the program I just showed you with module transformation, we can show it's actually twisted. Okay. In comparison, we can take the irreducible representation of the quaternion group. The quaternion group is a different group, but it has a very similar structure of irreducible representations as the D8 group. It has 5 irreducible representations, 4 of them 1D and 1 of them 2D. And it has the same, basically the same fusion structure as the representations of the D8 group. And similarly, we can make the omega semion such that it disappears from the bulk excitation. And if we do this, we find that the twisted gauge theory is again of the Z2 cross Z2 class, but it's not twisted anymore. So this is, I guess I don't have time to explain where this comes from. I did make slides. So this comes from, this guess is made from our study of surface topological order of Z2 cross Z2. SPT phases, basically we know what kind of surface topological order can happen for these kind of SPT phases. There can be a semion, and a semion transform under the Z2 cross Z2 gauge theory, under the Z2 cross Z2 symmetry. So basically what we did is to throw in the gauge charges for the Z2 cross Z2 symmetry group. So you throw in the charges and think of them as anions and combine them with the original semion on the surface and take the whole set as the input, then we can recover the three-dimensional bulk topological order. Basically, you can imagine this process as gauging the Z2 cross Z2, because gauge, after gauging, the gauge charge become quasi-particles on the surface. And also because the charges, they're self-bosonic and neutral bosonic, so they actually can leak into the bulk and correspond to the gauge charge of the bulk topological order. So I guess I'm well beyond my time, so I'll just finish here by saying that what we learned from this process is that work-along model can represent three-dimensional gauge theory, and moreover, it can represent three-dimensional twisted gauge theory with three-loop braiding statistics. And although it's not directly shown, we know that there must be non-trivial loop braiding statistics in this model. And of course, if we want to deal with fermions, we need to find a set of anions that has fermionic elements in the center, which doesn't braid with other things. And if we start with from such a set, and supposedly we also want the set to not just contain the fermions, but to be bigger and also contain something probably non-abelian, and then recover the fermionic twisted gauge theory in the bulk. Okay, thank you. I have. I've left 5 minutes.
So a few minutes for questions.
So for the last part, you mentioned that you can generate fermionic gauge theory. So do you have any example like?
No, we don't have example yet. We're still looking for it.
Okay.
Yes. Supposedly we can. Say produce the example of two-group theory by Anton and the one Meng talk about, which has a fermionic charge and braiding statistics.
So that part is still it's within this supergroup cohomology kind of construct.
Yes, yes.
But do you have anything beyond that?
I don't know.
Okay, thanks.
Quick question. I assume that both the work-along model and the Dijkstra-Witten's model can be expressed in terms of solvable lattice models. And in that case, can you compare them directly? Yeah.
They look totally different. We can compare them in the sense of module transformation, SNT matrix. Yeah.
In the examples that you gave with the semion, my understanding is that if I understood you correctly, is that the group is actually non-modular, correct?
The set of anions we input is non-modular.
Right. So the statement that you made in the beginning is that if the group is non-modular, then generally you expect to have some non-trivial topological order in the bulk. And yet you've shown at least some of the examples is that if you identify the C group with semions, then you cannot have them in the bulk because, you know, semions braid with itself. So am I missing something or there is a contradiction? So is the statement that if the group is non-modular, so if there is a non-trivial subset C of A, mm-hmm. does that mean that the topological order is always non-trivial or can be non-trivial but doesn't have to?
If there's a subset of C which yes. doesn't have braiding with anything else, then they are quasi-particles in a bulk, the bulk topological order is always non-trivial. That's right. The statement.
Right, but I thought you gave some counterexample where the subset can contain the semion, and
the
you concluded that it cannot be a quasi-particle in the bulk, therefore it must be trivial.
The semion is not in the center subset because the semion braided with itself. So if there is a semion, or if there's only a semion, then there's no quasi-particle in the bulk. If there's a semion, then the semion, but there's also other things, then the semion is not a quasi-particle in the bulk, but other things can.
So I have a question about the wave function of the walk-along model that you showed. So the first is, I don't know how meaningful it is to ask, but when you're considering condensation of loops, are you also considering anions that go and twist and then come back? and fuse with themselves.
Oh, you mean self-breeding statistics? Yes, yes, exactly. So, should have drawn them as ribbons.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
And the second is, are you also considering like really complicated breedings? I mean, in 3D, all kinds of complicated linked
yes.
loops. They're all included.
Yes. Well, yeah, but you only care about how they breed with each other. There are space-time trajectories of anions, so yeah, only each braiding counts, contribute. Yeah.
So this topological order you had eventually to get the twisted Walker Wank, you could was that like a guess, or you could figure it out from the transformation of the SPT phase,
yeah.
the anomalous SPT? There's some algorithm to go to that.
Yeah, so I would say we guessed it from there, because we can't really take the model, the decorated Walker-1 model and gauge it. That would be too complicated. We basically look at the surface anion. Yeah, this one. This is the twisted one, where the symmetry transformation is like I sigma x, sigma y, and sigma z. So yeah, I didn't get to talk about it, but this is the projective representation on the semion such that the bulk is twisted. And if you think of it as a linear representation, it's actually a linear representation of the D8 group. Mm-hmm. So we know that if we take a semion and the semion and we fuse it, if we think of the charge also as quasi-particle, then the fusion rule is like that. And this is basically the fusion rule of the D8 group. And this motivates us to guess that this should be the input of the worker one.
So maybe I could follow that up with another question. So
yeah.
In general, so from your diagram, it seemed like you believe that you can generate any twisted gauge theory that you desire in this way. And I was wondering, so, and then you gave us a very specific example. Do these ideas generalize?
I would hope, definitely hope so. Well, there are mathematicians sitting here, so
okay,
I don't know, yeah.
Yeah.
How general this could be.
Specifically here, you took this omega and you turned it into a semion. Obviously, that can only work under.
Yeah. Well, the question is, if I'm whether I can have a mapping from a set of anions. Potentially including some charge, and map them to the Dyckhoff-Witten model, or a fermionic twisted model, and whether that mapping is one-to-one. That I don't know for now, I just work out one example. Yeah.
Are there any other questions? Well, if not, let's thank Shia again.